all pay better attention in person for that type of period, but we'll just, we're going to get the, we're going to pack it out probably early next week, Julie?
Yes, the plan is on Monday. I'm supposed to be getting the rest of the information from Kim Lee Horn tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, so I just sent out the link, Kelly, on the calendar invite to tell people to use the link included in mine. It looks like we have people joining, and I'm going to start sharing my screen. Yeah, everybody see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Julie, I would say, are you able to monitor and go and drive entrances,
yes,
folks like that? I would say for sake of time, I have a hard stop at 2, so I hope it don't go that long. Shouldn't go that long.
I believe today should be shorter,
yeah,
just because we don't have as many sections to review.
Okay. So I would say if you're prepared and ready, let's go ahead and get started.
All right, well then we'll go ahead and get started. So we're gonna call a meeting to order. The first thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes from January 21 and February 4th. And I'll bring those up here. And what we did for January 21 was go over sections 2 and 5. And what we did for the February 4th meeting, we did sections 3, 8, 6, and 9. If anybody has any corrections, we'll get those marked down. And if not, we just need to have something on the record saying that you guys are good, and then we can move on.
I'm good.
There's a lot there, but I think it essentially is trying to document what was our discussion topics and such. And so accuracy is relevant to, I mean, Shelley does a good job, but I think it captures everything, and I think it's good to have documentation. So I think I'm good.
Okay, so we've got an official two goods. We're gonna move on, hearing no others. So I'm gonna keep on scrolling down. In the memo packet, it's the memo format that you're used to seeing by now. Just details what we're going to be reviewing, what we need to highlight for our discussions today, and then, as always, the sticking points of how easy it is to follow and understand. Does everything make sense? Is there a topic you expected to see that was missing or not covered? And is there a topic that you think should be moved to another section and another in another place of the ordinance that would be better housed there. With the slide deck, I think that is a good way to start. So we're gonna be reviewing sections 1, 4, 7, 10, and 11 today. Some of these sections are very small, some of them are very large, but we're gonna do a very high level of those large sections. Section 1 is the introduction. It basically establishes the town's authority for the LDO and tells where we're doing certain things in the ordinance. So I'm going to scroll down to here. What you see in the highlighted yellow are the dates that we need to plug in once this becomes effective. You'll see different call outs for where the applicability is, where we're going to have consistency with comprehensive plan, how we keep the zoning map, what is the official map, whether it's digital or paper, what is supposed to be on the map, who is the keeper of the map, how it has to be done by the town clerk, and a basic terms, not necessarily a definition, but more of the how terms are referred to and used throughout the LDO. When graphic images are there, they're for illustration and purposes of illustration only. The text will always guide the determination for those images. what we do with any conflicting provisions, and what we're doing with the transitional requirements for nonconformities and prior approvals before the LDO goes into effect, and how this does not, the LDO does not repeal or nullify any other private agreements, easements, or covenants or restrictions that have been done previously. So that section Julie, is, yes.
I have a question for Kelly. Once this is approved, Kelly, what date do you think this LDO will go into effect?
Julie, I'm going to say July 1, right?
Yes. It has to be in effect by July 1.
Okay, that's good. I asked for a selfish reason because I have a client that this may affect. Thank you.
Yes, if they come in, once we start scheduling the public hearing, there is going to be a provision for permit choice. Under the permit choice, as soon as we start scheduling those public hearings, if they want to come in under the old or the current UDO, they'll be given that choice. If they come in after July 1, they will not have that permit choice and they will be under the effect of the new LDO. Only anybody who is coming in during that scheduled public hearing time would have that transition period of you can go under the current UDO or you can go under the proposed LDO, depending on which ones they like best. But once they pick a permit choice, they have to stick with that throughout their development. They can't go back and change their mind.
Okay, so if my client, and we have an examination period issue, wants to come in May or June for a public hearing in July on the new UDO, you will consider that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So do I have any other questions for Section 1? All right, seeing none, then we will continue on. So look at you guys, we already bumped out one section. Moving right along to Section 4, overlays. Now this was a larger section. It's about 80 pages, 70 to 80 pages. It is a lot of information. I do not expect you to have read it all, but we do have a couple call outs that I would like to talk about. So I'm gonna go through the slides first and then we'll come back to the actual text. And I'm on two screens here, so hang on just a second, because while I'm sharing one, I'm trying to get my other screen so I don't lose my place in everything. So hang on just a second. And let me do this. All right. So for Section 4, some of the things that we had talked about was moving the definitions to the definition section, or do we want to keep them here for easy reference? And then the main reason why the definitions are housed in Section 4.1 is because it is a large section of terminology specific to the flood damage prevention overlay. Pulling them out to the definition section for Section 11 will make the Section 4 smaller, but will increase Section 11, and then you'll have to be doing a lot of flipping back and forth for that, just because the I lost my train of thought. Just because the terminology is specific to the flood damage prevention. So that's why we've got it there. That does increase a lot of the pages for Section 4. Mostly if you're not dealing with anything that's in the floodplain, or if you're not dealing with anything in the floodplain overlay, you'd be skipping these sections anyway. So it might be easier to house them there instead of putting them in the definition section where they're going to be mixed in with all the other definitions that somebody might be looking for. So there is some optional language in Section 4.1 that, and by the optional language, what I mean is we pulled heavily.
From oh, there you are. You just popped.
And what we've done with the state is the state has a model ordinance that is required that we put in for the community rating survey and for the floodplain overlays. What they do have in that that is considered optional language are further definitions or further restrictive language that helps with your ordinance being a little bit more defined in case you do have these areas in the future. So the bare minimum is what we have, and then the optional language is what's called out. So let's go to, it's about page 44 I put there. So I'm gonna flip up here. So some of this optional language here.
Julie, can you make it a little bit bigger?
I can, sir. Hang on just a second. What I'm gonna do is that better?
That's a lot better.
Okay, because when I share my screen, I lose everything else, so I don't see what you guys are seeing on your screens. So here, like the area future conditions flood hazard, we don't have to keep this definition in. We could, it's optional. We refer to it in other areas, and so staff is suggesting that anything that's optional from the state, we go ahead and leave in as part of our ordinance. That way, in the future, if something happens, we don't have to come back and do an amendment on that. Hang on, I see a chat box, and okay, just to point out, we do have more members who have joined us. Davey and Michelle are now with us as well. So with these optional language, staff is recommending that we go ahead and put them in. That way, later on, we don't have to do a text amendment to put these back in. We're of the mindset that we go ahead and put them in. They're optional from the state. But let's go ahead and put them in. They make it a little bit further restrictive from the normal regulations. But in the floodplain, the more restrictive you are, the better your ordinance is, and the more points you get for your community rating surveys later on if we become part of that program. So having that already in means it's one less text amendment that has to go before the Board of Commissioners and through the Planning Board later. So where you see the optional language, it is our suggestion that we go ahead and just leave that in as regular language for those definitions and for those restrictions. I am going to zoom back out for just a minute and flip down to the next one. Again, it's just it's a definition here on what needs to be done and how the agreement is recorded and what is happening with the agreement in this section. Again, optional language, and we do feel it's easier to leave that in now than have to go back later when we have a non-conversion agreement and have to put this language back in. The other question we had at staff level was the NAVD 1988. If you're not familiar with that, mean sea level was changed to the NAVD 1988 terminology. And my call out to the consultants was NAVD 1988 is getting ready to go away and it is going to become GRAVD or a GNSS. And so if we keep the NAVD 1988 language in, we will have to do a text amendment to change every reference to NAVD 1988 as soon as it goes away. What we can do with this language is say that in relation to NAVD 1988, instead of keeping mean sea level, which is mean sea level is what is in the current ordinance, we can also add language that says, or later approved standards or something like that, that would replace this. So if something, when they decide whether they're going to GNSS or GRAVD, we can already have that language in there and not have to worry about coming back through as a text amendment and changing this every time we see the NAVD 1988. Because that would be a public hearing. It would be going before the Planning Board and the Board of Commissioners just to make that terminology change. So my feeling is that we should add some language in there while it calls out NAVD 1988 right now, which is the current standard, that we set ourselves up for not having to do a text amendment in the next year or two when they change NAVD 88 to something else.
Julie, this is Derek. Would that language be better accommodated by, instead of addressing NAVD 1988 by its proper name, by creating a new definition called mean sea level? And then in that definition, we could say that have that open wording to say, at current, it's NAVD 98, but what could be XYZ in the future?
Yes, that's what we've done in the current ordinance. The current ordinance just uses mean sea level. However, mean sea level is kind of debatable. It's not a very technical term. And so in order for this to be a more technical version of the overlay for when specific things have to happen, you do need to specify what you're talking about by mean sea level. And so that was where the consultants were. For the engineering side, NAVD 1988 is the preferred term. For engineering and for code enforcement and for the enforcement of the floodplain overlay, a mean sea level is a little bit too broad. So changing it to NAVD 88 is the preferred language. However, I don't want to have to do a text amendment in the next year and a half. So I didn't know if there was some other way we could do this or if you had any other suggestions. But yes, we could just go back to mean sea level. It does make it a little bit more difficult to, you know, show what mean sea level is.
I'm just using the term mean sea level because it is, you know, what that's trying to represent. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that, but if we can make up our own, you know, we can call it technical mean sea level or whatever, you know, if we just make up our own term to put it in that specific place so that, you know, it's not confused with a vague term, but it's being specific enough to where, to your point, it doesn't have to be changed in 17 different places. It just has to be defined properly.
Yes, that's what I'd like to see. And as long as the steering committee is good with that, then the staff and the consultants can work on what that terminology is. But that's the question, is if you're comfortable with that. And Derek, it seems like you are. So does anybody else have any feelings on that?
This is Mike Moss. I had noticed that in the UDO and made a note of it. And I had made a note of just, labeling as NAVD 88 or currently accepted, because like you say, it is proposed to be changed within the next year to 2 years. And I didn't know if just adding the term behind that or currently accepted would cover us for this change and then future changes.
And I think it will. And if you guys are comfortable with doing that, then that is the direction I need so that we can keep on trucking.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I don't mind either way. I was only throwing out an idea there. So if adding that to the end of it works, that's good for me too.
Okay, great. We'll take it back to the drawing board with the consultants and make sure that we get something that will not need a text amendment in the next year. So the next little bit, again, is optional language and what we need to provide for different certificates from FEMA. This is record keeping that we have to do. Again, we are at staff level, we're suggesting keeping all the proposed language that is optional in the actual ordinance. That way we don't have to go back through. There is a change.
Go ahead. The only question I had there was whether or not, and maybe you highlighted some of these sections for the sake of keeping them in their entirety or reviewing the content of them. But it seemed, and I guess it's okay, but because again, this is not my area of expertise, but it seemed that the one sections that were asking about photographs seemed like they were a little bit thin, where it only wanted two photos of an elevation. And I didn't know if the question was to change that because this is, you know, in you know, in the photo size? Should it be resolution versus physical size, since almost everything is digital now? I wasn't sure if that's where you were going with this highlighted section or just keeping it in its entirety. But as I read it with, again, my perspective, it seemed a little light as far as a requirement goes.
Okay. Yeah, this is, again, the proposed by the state, and we can increase those number of photographs. So you need at least two for the FEMA certificate to be approved. And for that, typically they want the photographs to be with the files so that you've got the paper copy. Those paper copies are kept in perpetuity so that if, you know, you can always scan them in, you can always have a digital copy, but you, for FEMA, you do have to have paper copies and printed photographs. We can increase that from two up to more, but we need at least two to do the FEMA certificate. So if you want to increase at least, you know, from two to another number, we can do that. But the requirement here was calling out whether or not we wanted to accept the digital. And if we, you know, since we need the print for FEMA, if we want to accept digital as well, or if it's only digital that we're accepting.
Julie, this is Mike Moss again. Mm-hmm. I was curious about this section. It seemed like this section was going into a lot of detail about, you know, what has to be supplied with this elevation certification. And, you know, these are FEMA certifications, and they have a whole book on how they have to be filled out. It's almost we're trying to re-describe what their rules say. I mean, it almost seems like it'd be easier or simpler for the ordinance to just say, you know, do what FEMA says, because their rules are pretty explicit on how the photos have to be taken, how they have to be attached, and what it takes to have a completed elevation certification. And you know, it just seems like, you know, if they were to change one thing, and we've got all these rules on the number of photos and how they're done, then we've got to go back and change our ordinance.
Right.
That was just about it.
Yeah. The question is, do we want to be more restrictive, or do we want just to use the FEMA certifications and just do whatever it requires for FEMA to approve them?
There's nobody in this call, or town that's more knowledgeable than FEMA. I always come from a place, why would you do more than the mandate? Unless there's a really smart, specific reason.
It makes it a lot easier if we just do what FEMA requires.
Are you with Mike and with Kelly? Yes.
Yeah, I get to, because, you know, we've always had problems where documents don't agree with each other. And the less you set up for that failure, the better we are, I think.
I think we can rework this section then, and that'll probably make it a lot shorter, as well as we just reference more from
did the consultant feel this was best practices, or what was their reasoning for drafting all this?
Yes, well, a lot of it is pulled directly from our current ordinances, because that's what we currently have in place. And gotcha. So we adopted this already, and this is what we have on the books. And then we're updating it to make sure it matches what the FEMA requirements are today.
Julia, okay. let me step in here for a second. Let me explain about FEMA and flood certification for the town. This ordinance must be reviewed by the state. The state has a model ordinance because they are a cooperative agency to FEMA. And the model ordinance that they have does cover some of these areas which need to incorporate in there. When the UDO is adopted, as I mentioned to Julie, this will have to be presented to keep our certification of being eligible for flood insurance program. So I suggest, Julie, that we ask the consultant to review, or you get with the state and concur about before we make how we need to make these changes to comply. Because if you do not meet their guidelines, they will suspend the program for Rollsville. I've been there before. So I just want to caution you, it's not really us choosing the words, it's more of us following their requirements to stay in the program.
Mm-hmm. And Danny, isn't it true that, maybe somebody else can answer this, that many communities don't include this in their ODO and they just adopt as a separate ordinance?
Excuse me? Repeat that.
Isn't it true that many communities just adopt this as a separate ordinance?
No, you do not have to adopt it as a separate ordinance.
No.
There's communities that don't have zoning or subdivision regulations. That's what they have to do to have the program. Mm-hmm. But this is part of a UD land development ordinance instead of keeping them separate because it interrelates to development.
I understand. My previous life, they kept them separated. But I'm fine with either way. But I agree with your assessment, Danny. Let's make sure and let's double ask what I've asked, Mike's asked, the mayor's asked. And Julie, let's make sure we got our bases all covered.
Mm-hmm. So there is one little change here about the base flood elevation may result in increased premium rates. And that is a little change from the current ordinance. I wanted to call it out because this is what the state has now done in their model ordinance. It used to say will result in increased premiums, and now it says may. So while it looks like it's being relaxed, the consultants are not the one relaxing it. This is part of the new state language. So I wanted to call it out because it is a change, but it is a change from the state because they're not saying that it absolutely will result in the increased premiums until they review that from something else. So I wanted to call that out. We can keep on moving along. And I'm actually going to go back to, I think it was here. And that is, we've talked about that. Okay, page 44.
Hey, Danny, quick question for you. How much of this is really relevant to our community right now?
Well, you don't have that much floodplain in Rollsville, but it is relevant because everybody, even those not in flood prone areas, can apply for flood insurance. You got to realize that a homeowner's policy does not cover you at all if you ever get flooded. And that includes properties outside the flood zones. So, I mean, flood insurance is eligible for the very top of the mountain, the best way to say it. Now, the chances of getting flooding, it's very slim and it's an individual's choice.
Right.
But everybody can buy flood insurance because I got to stress again, if you get flooded, and that includes surface runoff, mm-hmm. you get flooded, you're not covered by insurance.
I know.
So you need to stay in the program, and it's not just those that are flood prone that's eligible for it. It's mm-hmm. the whole town.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks.
So one of the other call outs that we have is that the sections in our current UDO, section 7.2.5.6 and 7.2.5.7, these sections currently house the different uses that are allowed in the floodplain overlay. Do we want to keep those in this section 4 and drop those in because they are a little bit more restrictive than what comes along with just the underlying district? Or do we want to pull them out and put them in another place? They're not included in the template from the state. So having them would be optional language based upon that you know, what the state is requiring us to do. So we could keep them in, we could put them in a different place, or we could house them here as what we want those permitted uses to be. And currently in it calls out different agricultural uses, single family dwellings, different types of commercial uses, and then it prohibits things that would be environmentally detrimental as part of their uses. So I didn't know if the steering committee would like to weigh in on whether or not we keep those sections in. I believe since it's part of the overlay, they should be included in the overlay language. I didn't know if you guys wanted to talk about that or not.
I guess the only other way to do it would be put it in the use table.
Yes, that would be the other way. And since it's an overlay and not with the underlying district, the overlay can be more restrictive. And so putting it in the permitted uses table might make that table a little bit more hard to understand for people who are just reviewing it.
The only thing I'm going to say on this is that if the state has modified this section in their model, their template ordinance, you referring to the model?
Yes.
I would think we should follow that as well. I don't think we should deviate too much from it, because if you go into, there's a lot of court cases dealing with flood prone areas and their right to use the property. And you can't regulate it to a point that it's totally not buildable. But then if you limited some of the uses that don't have a good basis on it, doesn't relate to flood prone situations that the state and FEMA's determined is necessary, you could be into a regulatory taking question by property owner. So my caution on this is if the old ordinance had these restrictions, but the state doesn't have it in its recommended ordinance that they accept, I don't think we should exceed. But that's a community decision.
Because what we can do is if we, when we submit this to the state for their review, if we leave these sections in, they can tell us to take them out. If we leave the sections out and match the model ordinance, then it will be another round of review from the state if we ever want to add them back in.
I guess the question is, what's the path of least resistance? So if we leave them in, how easy is it to remove it? If we take them out, how easy is it to add them back in? Ultimately is how I would rephrase that, Julie, just to kind of get some understanding of it. I like the path of least resistance, so making sure that this is not another obstacle that's holding up the program. Mm-hmm. So if the state has wishes them or is taking them out, I say let's take them out. But I'm fine either way with the material that's presented right now. So I don't know if anyone else has any thought.
I would just say that if you're going to have limitations on uses in the floodplain, maybe in the use table section, wherever that is, mm-hmm. Maybe a note on the bottom of that table or in the language to check the floodplain ordinance or limitations or something like that.
Yes.
It just makes it, you know, if I'm reading through it, trying to figure it out, at least I'm not going to, you know. If you're in a floodplain, most of the time you're reading that ordinance anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, let me clarify, Tim. This is a overlay district. This imposes additional requirements to the general use districts or the conditional zoning districts with the use table. The overlay is not listed. Low overlay districts are not listed in that use table. So I think, and here's my suggestion, my recommendation is if we follow the state model of their specific guidelines and recommendations and requirements, and we should, that would be the point of least resistance. If you go and require something greater than that, then the town has got to justify why you're doing that. Why is it unique to Roseville that we're going to be greater than the average community in the state of North Carolina? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And yeah, I'm not trying to get away from that. I'm just trying to, if I heard it correctly, there's some limitations in this overlay district. And all I was going to say is that if you have a use table where most people go first to find out what they can do with their property,
just I would have a note,
just a little note that say, you know, make sure to check even if it's all the overlay districts for limitations.
Yeah. So we're talking about flooding in the overlay district. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
Because really, I don't know what we've done in the past. First of all, we don't have many flood areas in Roseville, but we've done a very, very good job. I think I looked the other day at all the floodplains that's on the maps, and we don't have anybody that's built in the floodplain right now. And I know, you know, you see on TV and a lot of places, you know, every time it rains real hard, places get flooded. I don't want that in Roseville. If we can prevent that from happening, I really think it's our responsibility to do that. I think we've done a good job in the past. So I don't want anything that would allow somebody to build somewhere where another person's going to have problems with it down the road.
I agree. I totally agree with that, Mayor. As I've lived here in the last 15 years, just a side note really quick to add to that, I've been seeing my creek bed rise several feet after just a little bit of downpour. It wasn't that way before. I'm sure that's just water runoff coming from new subdivisions being popped up, all the clear cutting. I don't know what the reasons are. I haven't done any research into it, but I've just observation, simple little rain. So what was not a floodplain may become one in the next several years.
Let me clarify, Davian, on that. Your surface runoff is not flood prone areas.
Mm-hmm.
They do feed into flood prone areas, but those are based off a hydraulic analysis approved by FEMA, and that mapping is approved by FEMA. Mm-hmm. There is a Wake County FIR map and flood zones designated, and those go through federal guidelines for approval that deal with the flood insurance program. And yes, historically in the past, those maps were not accurate. That's particularly after Hurricane Floyd hit here. The state went through extensive efforts to have restudies done, and using what they call LIDAR data, which is plane flying over with 1,000 points of laser shooting down and getting actual ground level topo to accuracy, to have increased accuracy. And that has been done. So the only issue is if, like you said, hydraulic conditions in time change with the flow of water downstream to a certain point that would require restudy. But I think up here in Roseville, up here in the main part of town, like in your area, I doubt you'll ever be designated a flood-prone area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think where we're going to get in trouble in the future is maybe some areas down near Mitchell Mill Road and those places as they develop.
Rogers. Remember Rogers got washed away a couple of years ago?
Yep. So, you know.
Yeah, Rogers, there is a floodplain there crosses there at Rogers. That's a floodplain.
Yeah, that is a floodplain. This is Derek. So, and this kind of brings to something to mind that I kind of wrote down when I started looking at this. And because there's the definition of flood just means water running over a space that's normally dry. It doesn't even allude to any amount of time, like how long it stays there. So that is an interesting thing in itself. But I am curious as to whether or not there is something the town should consider in calling out flash floods or flood risk areas to be a little bit more. To create more identification for areas basically around any stream to kind of expand upon what Davian's talking about how things are going to change over time and defining a flood risk area or a flash flood area that is essentially our creek beds. Because I've been studying this flash flood maps on the GIS for Wake County. And the 1% annual chance of flood, which almost seems like 100% chance of flood nowadays, reaches into the area where that child got killed last year.
I was just going to mention that.
And so I just kind of feel like, even though it may not be something that's directly attached to insurance, I still feel like maybe there's some room for calling out flash flood prone areas or flash flood types of situations for the sake of making sure we steer clear of those areas in development. But I don't really know if that's even relevant.
And Derek, I think you're, I understand your point, but I think that's an issue that needs to have extensive study that we couldn't do at this time. If you think that y'all as a group think that needs to be done by the town, I'd have a suggest that you suggest that option for study after the UDO is adopted in July 1st, and then do more extensive investigation. But to go develop a standard like that, you're going to require hydraulic engineering and expert analysis to justify it.
Oh, yeah, totally agree there, Danny. And I just wanted to make a point out for this, though, getting back to this UDO, I'm fine with the language, the way it, if we should just follow the state guidelines, but just be very mindful of this flooding as we get along. That's for another topic for sure. But I just wanted to be very mindful of what's going on and our future when it comes to floodplain. But for this, going back to the topic and staying on message, if the state requires us to remove, if the state has it removed, that language removed, I say we should just follow that, keep it as simple as possible.
So I guess my final question is, Julie, is this relaxing some standards we have in the past had, or is this the same standards we had in the past, or you know, how does it compare to what, and I'm thinking more of rising water, floodplain water. I mean, if you go to the IMAPs, Raleigh IMAPs, you can look at those, you can toggle those on and see where all those, 50-year, 100-year floodplains are. And like I said, we don't have any encroachments in those right now with any type of structures. So my question is this relaxing that? I mean, I would hate to see something come in the future and I click on IMAPs and there's a house in the middle of, in that floodplain.
This does not relax those standards. This state does not allow us to relax from what was already done. So what this does is further restrict. And so it does not relax currently what's on the books or currently our practices from today.
Okay, I'm good with that then.
All right, so I've got my marching orders there. Thank you. Good discussions. Let me go back. I think it was around. All right, so for the watershed overlay, there used to be something on the books, and I guess it still is until we get the new LDO on the books, but in the current UDO, there's something called the Watershed Review Board for the watershed overlay, and this is to update the language and make sure everybody knows who we're talking about. The planning board serves as that review board, so we've changed all the language from watershed administrator and watershed review board to land development administrator and the planning board for consistency throughout the document. Our current UDO is a little bit famous for adding titles and calling the same board something different every time there's something added. So what we're gonna do is just change that back to planning board to keep that consistent. For the watershed, what is currently done with the districts is it takes the watershed as an actual district. So you have a commercial district and you have the commercial watershed district. You have the R40 district and you have the R40 watershed district. You have the R1, you have the R1 watershed. You have the industrial and industrial watershed. So the whole districts kind of get renamed with what we're proposing. So we take out the districts and put in a watershed. The watershed overlay is then just on top of the current zoning. So you have the underlying zoning as it is now, whatever it is like instead of having the commercial watershed, you would have the commercial zoning with a watershed overlay on top of it. And that cleans up the zoning map so you don't have, 27 different types of districts. You've got the handful of districts with the watershed overlay placed on top of it. I'm going to get my page number here. So that was back to
at page 46. Or 73.
Yes, thank you. So here what we've done, again, this is a different feel than what we're used to by having the different districts, but it is the same basic principle from the districts that we have for the overlay, and where the overlay is currently will be where the districts are. We still keep the special intensity allocation in the special intensity allocation areas are still called out like they are in the current ordinance. In the watershed overlay, we do have some permitted and special uses that are allowed. These are more restrictive from the overlay than they are in the underlying zoning district. So that's why they are housed here. And the prohibited uses of what you can do in the watershed, and that's basically landfills that discharge, are prohibited in the watershed to protect the drinking water supply.
Julie, I have a question.
Sure.
Back to the elimination of the W, R40W, meaning watershed.
Uh-huh.
So if we adopt this, and there's a real estate broker or developer looking for land around Rollsville, and he goes to the Wake County real estate site where we search for properties.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, we can see if it's in the watershed, because the zoning, it would be R40-W.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that W still going to be there in the Wake County tax records, or will a person looking for real estate in Rollsville not know it's in the watershed because we've just changed it to watershed overlay?
For the tax records, it would be the underlying zoning district. I don't believe they put the overlays on top. They would have to then contact us or look at our zoning map for the overlay.
I have a problem with that, because real estate brokers and developers that are looking for land want to know right away if it's in the watershed. And we know it now because it's got a W beside it, R40W, R1W, or whatever. This is something we need to think about.
Thank you. Yes.
Aren't the watersheds on IMAPs? I think there's a layer on there.
There is a layer, but if you're just pulling the tax record, it's not listed on the tax record. Is in the listing, is they just use the zoning. You would actually have to go to the map to see the overlay.
That's right. And right now, if John Doe calls me and says that he has 50 acres of land he wants to sell, first thing I'm doing is looking at the tax records. I go to the real estate search page, type in his name, his summary comes up, and under zoning, it'll say R40 or R1, whatever. But if it's in the watershed, it's got a W beside of it. And I know then that it's in the watershed and it has restrictions. I don't want that to go away.
Okay.
Yeah. And if the whole piece is not in the watershed, Jackie, I think it shows percentages, don't it?
It's yes. I mean, it gives you a red flag where you can go to the GIS mapping and click on layers, click on watershed, and it'll show you what portions of that are in the watershed.
Right.
If that W is not there, it doesn't prompt you.
Let me summarize here a little bit for everybody. The labeling that will be displayed in IMAPs is something after the ordinance is discussed, or we got something in advance of it, we communicate with the tax appraiser's office to make sure that they have the development restrictions that affect the value of property for tax purposes in their system. And the watershed designation is going to have to be one of them that they have to figure out between GIS and their system. The problem is they only have one layer, one record on it. And I think we just need to talk to Wake County Tax Mapping and the appraisal department and see how they will address the destination of watershed. The purpose of getting rid of all these districts is that it just created a mammoth number of districts for Roseville. And a lot of communities with watershed say, let's make it an overlay, apply that because it doesn't apply to everybody in the jurisdiction. And then whatever you zone under it, whether it's commercial, industrial, or residential, you still got the overlay supersedes that, what's the base zoning. So Jackie, for example, it could be industrial property and have an overlay on it that limits the impervious coverage. It doesn't eliminate
the use. I know that looking at the summary.
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying. So it's talking to them to figure out how to work out their labeling so the people will know.
Yes.
Okay, so that's okay. That's a technical thing to work out. Julie, I'm going to get back to, I had sent to them previously the section above you got, is it 4.3, dealing with the list of uses? With the list of permitted uses in the district, I think you went past it. The list of the commercial, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's not necessary anymore because you got an overlay, and what you got in restrictions that apply to the under the overlay is whether it's residential and a lot size or non-residential and the impervious coverage. That's state watershed protection rules. State watershed protection rules does not tell you to go put a list of uses in. So that's section on permitted and special uses and watershed overlay carry over from the fact that there were individual districts and you had zoning that says R40. So you had to go list your R40 uses and then apply watershed on it. This is reversing that. And that what's the underlying district will apply. And then the watershed will just put additional requirements on to protect the watershed. I thought they had taken that out.
James, you got that?
Yep. Yeah, we're listening here. For the record, James Zerman, Kimley Horn, and thanks for that, Danny. Yeah, I think there was a little confusion once we merged those as to whether to retain that, or like you said, now that we have the simplified approach of the build to area or the build areas and whatnot and the percentages, I think that does take care of that. So I think we'll go ahead and clean that up and remove that from the section.
Thank you.
All right, I've got that starred in my notes, and I also had Jackie have a star that we need to continue talks with Wake County for that, how that's going to be listed on the tax district to make sure that
on the tax summary
that we can make the zoning map a little bit easier to understand, and then also that tax listing label so that you guys on the broker side have that tip off that you need to do a little bit more research that there are other restrictions besides that. So I've got that flagged as well.
And I need to throw out a little.
It's on the real estate summary.
Right. And I understand, Jackie. I was going to throw out a little bit of disclaimer. And you, if you talk to tax mapping, they'll tell you this. What they put on there is not official. You still are highly recommended to check with us to verify the zoning, and they may not have the information correctly. They do not take responsibility on the zoning classifications on tax records. I'm just sharing that with you because that's happened many times where people go to it and then that's they think is everything's good and they go check and find out, well, there's a little bit more on that restriction than that told me. But I understand what you're getting, Jackie. I know you're trying to share quick information because you're making a decision on listing the property or talking to a potential buyer, and it, you know, I understand what you're trying to accomplish there, but we have to be careful that they do have some standardizations over there that just sometimes creates a problem, regardless how we approach it. But they'll get through and work it out.
All right. Any other comments on watershed overlays?
Julie, I did I guess it's a little further down section 4.2.7 of once we get into the dimensional requirements. The for the residential uses, I noticed the front setback is 50. And then they had the maximum lot coverage is 36%. It seems like in the watershed overlay area, we would, you know, want to minimize, you know, the impervious amounts and the lot coverage. And by pushing that front setback back, that just increases driveway lengths and creates more impervious. I'm wondering, would it be better at 30? I know in Wake County, and there are 40 watershed districts, the front setbacks are 30. And if you do a cluster, you can go as little as 15 feet. So 50 just seems kind of large for a front setback.
All right, we'll relook at those.
All right.
And you can reduce the front yard setback if you feel that's appropriate with a 40,000 square foot lot. But remember, with the 40,000 square foot lot minimum, the state and rules, watershed protection rules, does not mandate build upon surface area. It says if you've got a 40,000 square foot lot, regardless how much you build up on it, don't ask me why, but that's just the way it is, that you don't have to worry about impervious coverage. Impervious mm-hmm. coverage applies to non-residential.
I'm just thinking too about having more impervious is just going to increase and create even more runoff in that watershed, which is mostly closer to our flood areas. But I'm just what I've seen in other municipalities and working with builders, 50 foot is kind of a large front yard setback, because that's setback 50 feet from the right of way, and then typically in these areas you're going to have another 20 feet to the edge of the pavement, so the house is going to be setting back 70 feet from the edge of the pavement roughly.
And Julie, yeah. I need to get with James and you guys on this SIA thing, because we probably need to modify that section, because then if you're going to SIA, it's going to be whatever, it's going to be a 70% coverage, 70% pervious coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever the underlying zoning district, low, medium, or high density would apply.
And Julie, I had one thing I noticed in table 4.2.7.3 about the manufactured homes. I think the lot width may be typed incorrectly there. It's got 11. I think that was intended to be.
We have that flagged as a comment.
Yeah, and then that one had the 50-foot front yard setback as well. So that's just one I'd like to see us take a look at, is that front yard.
We don't need to treat manufactured homes different from residential single family. We don't need to do additional requirements on manufactured homes.
The ordinance for the underlying ordinance for manufactured homes would apply normally.
So that table could just be removed and be.
It's a duplication, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be covered as residential use.
Well, you can have two districts. You got the rural manufactured home district and the urban manufactured home. And it has to be in that classification to put a manufactured home in. And that probably came from the watershed, rural, and urban districts that were freestanding. We'll work that out.
So, Julie, in looking at this, I didn't see it anywhere, but I just want to make sure. There is no language in here where prohibiting annexation into the watershed, is it?
Not by the rules that what we're applying here. Annexation depends on meeting the town's directive. And of course, as you know, is the biggest issue with annexation here in Roseville is the merger agreement for utility services and the county.
Yeah.
The ETJ expansion.
Yeah, I'm aware of that one.
It's not in the land development ordinance that restricts that.
Yeah, and I want to be sure it's not in there. That's good. Not.
Okay, let me go back to you. All right, was there anything else in section four? If not, we'll move on to section seven, which is the special standards. So this is where we're putting all our unique standards that are guided by the 160D regulations and different state legislation for things that the town has to do or consider. So these are where we're housing the special standards. Right now, the biggest thing for section seven is the telecommunication towers. The electronic gaming section, if we decide to do electronic gaming, could go here or it could go somewhere else. We're still getting determination on whether electronic gaming is a legal use. The town cannot permit illegal uses. So once we get a little bit more verification on whether or not electronic gaming is a use that we have to list, it may go in this section. Right now we have struck the language because we do not think it is listed as a legal use and that the town does not have to have that in our classifications for some place to have it in our zoning districts. So the other thing that is in this is the telecommunication towers on co-locations, towers, you know, cell phone towers, co-locations of those different different companies on existing towers or things such as water towers and this small wireless is those little cabinets or the ones that go on top of your telephone pole or the ones that go on top of your light pole. They can go on top of the roof. It's the more 5G compatibility, smaller, about the size of 6 cubic feet type cabinet type thing. With the 160D regulations and some previous state legislation, we have to have standards for that. So we have followed the state standards from 160D and the state bills for that language. So it makes it a little bit easier. We've just kind of dropped that language in so that we are sure we are in compliance. So we have updated that section and we may rename the section in the future, depending on what all gets housed here. If it's just telecommunications, then we'll put it as telecommunications standards rather than special standards, depending on what goes in here. So that was section seven. It's a little bit small compared to every other section that we've reviewed so far, especially chapter four with the floodplain stuff. Most of this is pulled from either the current ordinance or from the state statutes updates on how you do your standards, how you the timing, the consultant fees, what you can permit, what you can't permit, what you look at, what is a substantial modification, what is not a substantial modification, and where that placement can be, and the abandonment of the facilities. And a lot of that, like the abandonment, is carried over from our current ordinance. And that is that entire section. Did we have any questions? Telecommunications are really exciting topics. I don't want to bore you. So basically, again, this is regulated by 160D in current state legislation and is mostly pulled straight from there. If you do have any questions or comments later, you can always contact me. Section 10 is the nonconformities. The nonconformities relies on the current UDO language and state statutes for nonconformities. This section details what we're going to do with the existing nonconformities and what we'll do with the new nonconformities that might come around from changing the current UDO to the proposed LDO and how we're handling those, that transition, and for anything that might not necessarily be a substandard lot today, but as of July 1 might be a substandard lot. And so chapter 10 details how we're going to handle that. We talk about nonconformities for uses, for structures, and for lots, and basically how the LDO, if you have an existing nonconformity, what we can do as far as either continuing that nonconforming use or when you have to bring it up to current standards. Were there any questions on chapter 10? Or section 10, sorry.
I really don't have any questions. I just have a comment that as Roseville ages, let's use that word, this section will be very important because there will be redevelopment occur. And when redevelopment occurs, this is a section that always gets pulled.
Yes.
So just make sure we know it because it is, it's going to be a future, very much a future important section as for redevelopment opportunities.
Kelly, the only thing I was going to say on that is, and essentially with the nonconformity, is if you go to redevelopment of the property, it has to conform with whatever zoning district and regulations that applies to that particular property from the land development ordinance. Once you remove a nonconformity, you can't go back. That's the best way to say it. So it's a measure that limits nonconformity's ability to expand and enlarge. It allows them to be repaired, but you can't enlarge them and you cannot increase the nonconformity in essence. And the only way you can get better use of the property is to be in compliance and conformity to the zoning classifications, zoning districts. Good comment.
I agree with both of you, Danny and Kelly, that yes, this part, I have actually no questions, but just to kind of piggyback on your comment there as well, this is section, it's going to be one of those sections that is going to be really put to the test in the next several years. I know that we are looking at it as things start to change. The dynamics of Roseville continues to change and improve. I like to use that word improve, that we are making these changes to better Roseville and not worsen it. But yes, this section will be put to the test for sure in the next decade or so.
All right, good. Thank you. Section 11 is the definitions. We put it in here. It's the most, an LDO is considered a living document because you're constantly updating it, but the definitions is probably the last section that's going to be finished as we go through, because we are continuously updating throughout the process of where we house these definitions. We're moving things from one section to section 11. We're moving things around. We're making sure that any new terms get placed in section 11. So what you see today, it's a long section, but it may be much longer by the end of the document. It sits at the back of the document because that's, it is a reference and a guide for the terminology, but it is not necessarily where any standards are housed. So you go there to just make sure that you're on track with whatever the definition is talking about. So when you're talking about maybe one or two things and you want to make sure you've got the definition correct, you just turn back to section 11. So this is one of the sections that we have to have. It's relied upon immensely, especially when we're doing interpretations of the code or when we're trying to figure out certain things that can, you know, may or may not be or shall not be allowed on site. So this is a section we do use, but it's going to be added to for the next several months until we get to the final document. But if there are definitions that you expected to see that aren't in there, let me know. And it has been comprehensive up to this point. The Kimberly Horn has been doing a great job with keeping all the terms and graphics and everything in here to help with those new terms, especially as we've added a lot of sections in this LDO that are new, such as the mixed use and talking about blank walls and transparency and all that kind of stuff being added in so that people understand what we're talking about. So section 11, I'm not going to do an overall review of it's the definitions. And if you have any questions about certain definitions, we use the dictionary to help write the definition. And then if there's a definition that is specific to our LDO, it's either housed in the definition section or in the section that it refers to, such as those definitions back in section 4.1, which are more floodplain appropriate and really need to be called out in the floodplain ordinance. So that is how we've done this here. Any questions? All right, so that's it. Our next meeting is scheduled for March 18th. You guys have now seen the entire LDO. You have heard about it, talked about it, and reviewed it. So that is it in a nutshell. It only took you from October to now. And it is that is our first draft, and we are working on getting those we'll take the comments today and get another draft in. We'll start, the things that I've starred today on what I need to do and look into next and go from there. We do have a planning board and board of commissioners joint work session scheduled for February 26th, where we get to introduce this to the planning board and the board of commissioners together. They have been receiving work sessions. I think they received one in July, August timeframe, one at the end of September. We do have some board of commissioners on our steering committee. We do have some planning board members on our steering committee. So you guys will be well-versed when we go into this meeting on Friday next week. You'll have seen all this information at least once before. So you may not have seen all of it in the way it's going to be presented. We've dived very deep. We have dug deep into this text to make sure that we are discussing the points that we need to discuss. At this work session, it's about 6 hours of a meeting. It's going to talk a lot about all the different topics. So everything you've done over the last 6 months, we're going to boil down and handle at the work session for the boards next week. So if you want to watch that, it's on Friday. It starts at 9. If you want to get a summary, I would suggest reading the minutes later. I will be giving an update during that presentation from Kimberly Horn on what we have done here at this steering committee. So I'll be giving a summary of all our meetings, going over pulling heavily from the minutes that we have, but going over what we discussed to make sure that the planning board and the board of commissioner members who aren't on this steering committee have that full view of what you guys have been doing for the last 6 months. You have participated well. You have been given a lot of information. You've been given a lot of work, and I really appreciate it. At our next meeting, I will probably be doing a wrap up. So we'll talk about some of the other comments that have come in. We'll give you an update for what happened at the February 26th work session. And then we will see what we need to do in the meantime with the steering committee, whether that will be our last meeting or whether we'll have one or two more meetings after that. And we will hopefully at that point, since you have seen all of this and done all this work up to this point, the next meeting, you will just be receiving information. You will not be having to think too hard or rely too much on text. And so again, thank you. It's been a pleasure working with you guys, and the next meeting should be a little bit more relaxed atmosphere for you.
Hey, Julie, this is Kelly. And just aside, I want to echo everything you said in your work also getting this through this point. I think on the 26th, when we go through that meeting, one of the items we'll probably have in front of this group on the 18th of March will be what I would call anything that comes out of that meeting that needs further vetting. So, because that meeting is going to be long, but it's going to be also very direct, and there might be some issues or questions come up. And instead of trying to resolve them in that meeting, we might say pull them out and let this group work through them. So there could be a handful of items continually out of that meeting or elsewhere that will be needed to kind of be vetted through this group. And so it could be very specific topics, even more so now instead of 400 odd pages of LDO. So we'll just track those, but I think we ought to be prepared that there might be some engaging conversations on a couple of issues that might deserve our time. So,
Julie, I just want to say thank you, and Danny, I know this was a lot of work that you guys did, because oftentimes after the meetings, my head is spinning, such as today's. So I do want to ask you just now if you can set up some time later I wanted to go over a couple of things that we talked about today.
Yep, that's fine.
Which is why I had no questions. I was trying to take it in and take notes.
Okay.
But thank you for all that you've done, because my God, that was a lot.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so with that, it's about 1:15. So we're a little bit ahead of schedule. I was not thinking it would take the full 2 hours. So if you would like to have a little bit back time back for your day, we will dismiss. And we'll see what happens between the February 26th work session and then when I report back on March 18th, we'll see where we need to go next. And until then, I, again, thank you for your time and participation. And if you have any other questions or comments, you know how to reach me and I'm available. And once this is kind of final and over, we'll have a party as soon as COVID-19 stops. So,
sounds good.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
You very much. Bye.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Just gonna stop it.